Please keep us in mind when you're about to shop at Amazon. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click on the Amazon logo on that page, and it takes you right to the Amazon homepage. But that two-second detour by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon means we get a commission on whatever you buy on that shopping trip. So every single time you're going to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Jake, how do you grade WWE's attempt in week two to get the fans to boo Becky Lynch and not reject Charlotte at the same time?
Total failure on all levels, really. I don't know why, you know, they continue to run into this electric fence both on Raw and SmackDown. It's kind of, you know, the same situation, you know, whether it's Charlotte or Roman Reigns. You have two, you know, miscast babyface characters who crowds have mixed responses to, and you know, two popular characters in Braun Strowman and Becky Lynch, who they've decided to turn heel, you know, in service of their promotional goals. I'm assuming, you know, Roman Reigns and Charlotte have been, you know, two of their biggest, you know, front runners in terms of promotion for a long time. So I think they're risking doing serious damage to, you know, the entire ensemble cast by continuing to try to make, you know, round pegs fit into square holes and vice versa.
Yeah, and I felt bad for Charlotte. You know, I mean, they go to replay what Becky did, and she didn't, you know, cut a promo on the fans. She just was determined and fierce, and of course attacking someone from behind should not be a babyface move, but the crowd's chanting her name. They're chanting for her. And then they go to Charlotte, who's leaning in the corner, trying to recover from what happened, and the crowd boos as soon as they see her on the big screen. This is not a good situation for Charlotte. You know, say what you will about certain baby faces being booed against heels. And usually, you know, there's two to blame, in a sense. You know, the fans sort of had an in for the baby face and really liked the heel, and so it happens. Here, I don't think fans really had any kind of negative thoughts about Charlotte, but it's turning into an image on TV that fans don't like Charlotte when I think they did like her. So she's a victim in this too.
Yeah, in a sense, I think she's always been a bit miscast as a babyface. You know, she's not as effective in that role. And I think she even, you know, has spoken a preference about, you know, wanting to be a heel if she had her way. But yeah, they've really set this whole feud up for failure, not necessarily in the sense that, you know, Becky is any less popular than she was as a babyface, but you know, it's going to be a difficult road for Charlotte to overcome, because it just doesn't seem like fans are willing to come along with this story. And I don't know if they, you know, go back to the drawing board and try to tweak this to the point where neither of them are straight babyface or heel, or, you know, if they do a double turn at some point and really try to win people back over. It's going to be a difficult road ahead, and I don't know. The way that, you know, Vince McMahon has been, you know, steadfastly sticking to his guns at various points over the last few years, it's hard to see an immediate turnaround on the horizon.
I agree. If this was their big comeback to the criticism of what they did last week, if the idea was, we'll just be patient, we'll make it work, I don't think this was a particularly impressive chapter two in trying to turn the crowd against Becky. I mean, there just wasn't a lot to it. Well, we got a lot of people lining up on the phone banks. If you want to get in line, you are invited to do so. Our number is 347-215-8558. We got a lot to talk about on this show. Another AJ Styles Samoa Joe promo, more with Miz and Daniel Bryan and Bree and Maryse in the mix, and a showcase opportunity for Andrade against Bryan. And some mic time for Zelina. We had Orton and Jeff Hardy with a big announcement and more. So we'll talk about all that with calls, an on-site correspondent, and email. If you haven't emailed us yet, but you can't call into the show, you can do so. If you have anything to say about the show or in reaction to what we're saying, that email address is wadekellerpodcast at pwtorch.com. We'll get to calls in just a moment.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week. With the state of wrestling, Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at Stitcher.com/NotSam.
Let's set the stage for the program here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Covering the Tuesday, August 28th, 2018 edition of SmackDown, I'm Wade Keller, editor of PWTorch.com and host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcasts. Tomorrow, by the way, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will join me for the Thursday flagship over on our Blue brand. So search Wade Keller and subscribe to the Blue brand, the Blue logo shows that are later in the week. If you haven't yet, this is our red logo show, the post shows. I am joined today by Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. Jake, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure to be here, man.
You can read Jake's reports at ProWrestling.net every Tuesday night as he covers SmackDown live during the program. You can compare what he's saying about the show to what I am saying with my live reports at PWTorch.com. Let's get right to the phone banks. Got a lot of people on hold wanting to talk about tonight's show. And if you are on hold, or if you called in but haven't and want to participate, be sure that you push 1 on your keypad. That indicates that you want to come on the show. Otherwise, we will not bring you on the program. And we will go first to area code 305 and then 585 on deck. 305, thanks for calling. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Wade. Javier from Miami.
Javier, thanks for calling. What are your thoughts on SmackDown?
It was really good SmackDown. I don't know if it's just that SmackDown's been really good or if it's that by comparison to Raw... It just looks very good, but I really enjoyed I'm actually looking forward to SmackDown as opposed to dreading Raw's.
Yeah. What'd you like in particular?
I'm not a huge Charlotte fan, neither as a heel nor as a face, but I thought that she, because she's very robotic in a lot of times, things that she does.
Yeah.
But I thought that she cut probably the best babyface promo today on the show that she has.
Yeah, it wasn't enough, but yeah, she is robotic, but I thought it was a good promo. I mean, I thought it was a step forward for her. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, certainly one of her better promos backstage. I think she's getting better at conveying tone, and she's not emphasizing the wrong words a lot, which she had a problem with in the past.
How could you say that, Jake?
Yeah, they got pretty rough at times, but I still think she has an issue with emoting, like with her face. Like she's got the same issue that Trish Stratus had last night on Raw, where like her forehead and her eyes don't move, and she has issues with, you know, especially as a baby face, you want to seem upbeat and have a charm about you, and that's one of the things that Becky did a lot better than Charlotte does as a baby face, and I still think that's something that she'll have to improve at if they're going to keep going down this road. But this was certainly some of the better delivery we've seen from her.
Javier, anything else?
Oh yeah, I just want to touch on Daniel Bryan real quick. If I were him, and I wasn't renewing my contract, Cien Almas would be on the short list of wrestlers I'd like to wrestle before I left.
Yeah.
You think there was anything about him wrestling Cien?
No, I think this was a chance to give. I'm glad they protected Andrade and didn't have him tap out, and they had all the chaos and interference from Miz. I thought this was just a chance. I mean, SmackDown has only so many wrestlers on the roster. We can say about every roster ever, but it's more limited than Raw in the depth chart. And they only have 2 hours to fill, but Andrade is going to have to wrestle some people, and it's not just the person he's feuding with at the moment for pay-per-view. SmackDown looks for people, matchups where they can fill TV time with good wrestling. And if they can have both wrestlers who are participating come out winners, if they're protecting and pushing both guys, or both women in some cases, then that's what they do. And I thought this was a chance for Andrade to look like he belonged in the ring with Daniel Bryan and have Zelina and Brie kind of be in opposite corners. But it was a setup for Miz and Maryse, obviously, to come out. I didn't see it as a dream match or a showcase for Bryan on his way out as much as, yeah, they're just so many people on the roster, and we have a chance to forward the Daniel Bryan Miz storyline, but also give Andrade a chance to show what he can do against the best opponent he's wrestled yet in WWE, although I guess he took on Styles too. So he's had some opportunities, and this was another one. Jake, any thoughts?
I mean, I thought the match itself was very good. I mean, it's clear that they didn't have a lot of familiarity with one another. It seemed like they were kind of feeling each other out quite a bit during that match and trying to make their, you know, their spots line up and fit together. But for the most part, it was very smooth and clean. So I'd love to see more of that feud down the road, especially if they can really get a chance to work on those matches on the house show circuit and deliver something really good for a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Javier, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good one, Wade.
Yep, you too. Appreciate it. All right, 585, you are up, and then 814 on deck. 585, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Wade. It's Stephen Miller from Canandaigua, New York.
Hey, David, good to hear from you again. What'd you think of SmackDown?
Thanks. I thought SmackDown was really good this week. Very good show from top to bottom. I especially enjoyed the women's match there at the end. I thought it was really good. I think Carmella is actually improving in the ring as a worker. She pulled off a few things tonight I hadn't seen before, and I think she's really getting better. But yeah, I agree. The heel turn with Becky, that's just going over like a screen door in a submarine. That is just not working at all. I think what they need to do, if Vince insists on sticking to this storyline here, they need to find some way to maybe do a little something like they did with Braun Strowman last night. Have her in line with a couple of vile heels that the crowd doesn't like, or even better, she might start talking about Ric Flair, you know, talking smack about Ric Flair because the fans love him. But yeah, the fans really did. They were into Charlotte until now, and it's just Becky was so over with the fans that this is going to be a very difficult thing for them to get over. Unless they can find a way to make Charlotte more sympathetic and find some way to make Becky look more vile, as I said.
I'm not sure what the solution is, Jake. Thanks, David. Do you think there is something that could have been done last week and this week that they've missed out on? I mean, you covered a lot of sensible bases in terms of why Charlotte, and I agree, Charlotte's better as a heel than a face. I don't think she was in any way being rejected by fans, but they weren't just enthusiastically, you know, behind her like they are Seth Rollins or Daniel Bryan or AJ Styles or anything like that. But I mean, even Brian James took to Twitter to kind of, make his case, essentially in charge of creative on SmackDown, a senior member, making a case for why they did what they did and why people should stick with it. And some people had defended it, saying the more passionate the fans feel in favor of somebody, the more effective it makes a heel turn. I think that can be the case. I don't think with Becky it is, because she hasn't been pushed as a top babyface, and now she's turning heel. She's on a journey that fans are very excited to see her on, finally getting the spotlight. They don't want to boo her now that she seems to be getting the spotlight that they want her to have, because they have a genuine connection with her. And on a meta level, they're protesting the booking. I just don't know how you fight that. You talked about running into an electric fence. David called it a screen door on a submarine. Brian James didn't seem really open to considering that this was a mistake when he was defending it on Twitter this past week.
Yeah, I read Brian's comments. I guess, you know, everybody's going to have their own take on it. But I think the fans are making it pretty clear that, you know, they have a favorite here that they want to cheer. And it is to Charlotte's, you know, detriment. But, you know, if they had retooled this, you know, heading into this week to make Becky more of an anti-hero than a straight heel, you know, maybe that could work for her, because she fans seem to actually like the new confidence and attitude that she's showing off. I just think they're rejecting the idea that someone who, you know, went through the majority of the SmackDown women's roster on the way to getting a title shot, and then Charlotte comes back and, you know, title shots kind of fall out of the sky. Essentially, you know, they're not buying what Brian was saying about them having to fight the same uphill battle to get that opportunity. And so I think the explanation and the way that it's been portrayed on television has been, I guess, you know, it just seems like fans aren't buying into the whole story. And so we'll have to see if they have some master plan here. But I think they're going to try to stick to the course, and it's going to be, you know, a tough road for both Becky and Charlotte to try to navigate through.
Yeah, I think their priority was on what they want to do with Charlotte over the next, you know, 3 to 6 months. And Becky was there, and they looked at a short list of women who could go against Charlotte and seem like a fresh matchup. And Becky was the best of the options, but she was a babyface, and they want Charlotte as a face for whatever long-term story they're telling with her. So Becky was just a utility that they needed to turn for the convenience of the course they're on with Charlotte. And whether fans have thought it through to that degree or not, I think they recognize it for what it is. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. All right, let's go to our next call. Thank you, David, for your comments. We'll go to 814 and then 803 after that. 814, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, thanks for calling again. What's on your mind tonight?
My question is on the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view. I think it's possible we could see any blood, maybe not, I'm talking like a razor being used, but like being so physical, since Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy are involved, and Randy Orton has a history of being able to draw blood without even using the razor when he had that match with Brock Lesnar, and also Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. Samoa Joe's had some blood spilled without even using the razor, so I think there's a good chance we could see that.
Jake, WWE isn't going to admit to blading. They're not going to admit to even intentionally hard way bleeding. We have seen some blood. They're not, sometimes they reference it, sometimes they don't. They're not running in with a towel and stopping the match. They aren't promising blood. That's not a word that's said. I think even, what was the term Paul Heyman used? And he goes, I know they don't like us saying this word, if it was violence or just the word violence, maybe. There are certain words they stay away from, and certainly promising blood is not part of their marketing right now. But I do think some fans want to see, when you get in a Hell in a Cell situation, they feel that's a grudge match that should reach the level where maybe some bleeding would result. I think it's going to be more happenstance or a plausible deniability situation where it just happened, but there's a wink and a nod with the wrestler bleeding a little bit, either hard way or a blade. But I don't think they're going to overtly just get back into that business on a routine basis, though. I think that is part of the past.
Yeah, I would agree. I just don't see them going out of their way. I mean, they're certainly not going to sell, you know, a pay-per-view based on, you know, blood and guts kind of storylines, and they don't portray them that way on television. They don't use the word violent, or at least they try to stay away from it, unless it's somebody like Paul Heyman, or I think Randy Orton has said it in his promos as of late as well. But they'll kind of blur the lines a little bit, like that stuff they did with Jeff Hardy's ear socket and things like that, where, you know, they'll make things look like they're brutal and they'll make you cringe, but they don't take the blood and guts approach anymore. It's just not part of their promotional tactics.
No, and I don't blame them. I mean, I think at this point I understand why they're taking that approach. Ryan, anything else for us?
I think I just have for you is on Carmella. Do you think she does that suicide dive better than some of the male wrestlers, like, say, Dean Ambrose? Because she doesn't even, like, put her hand in front of her face. She just is all out on that dive. And it's a pretty clean way, I think, for a female.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things she does better, Jake.
Yeah, she hit a great, suicide dive tonight, and Charlotte had a great catch, and it was sort of a repeat of the spot they did at the SummerSlam pay-per-view with Becky catching her on that attempt. But it seems like she's trying to add some things to her list of signature spots, and that's one of them. I applaud her for trying to broaden her horizons a bit.
Did you like the match? I didn't think it ever got into a flow. Like I didn't think, and I think it's one of the deficiencies with Charlotte, and I think Carmella still ideally or maybe necessarily needs to be in the ring with somebody quite a bit better than her to have a main event caliber match. And they were given a good amount of time, close to 15 minutes, to tell their story. And, I mean, there were moments of just complete silence late in the match. There wasn't a flow. There wasn't that just sense of art and owning the crowd like some of the top wrestlers can do. And I know they had time, and that there were a couple spots here and there that worked, but there are other spots that were clunky. And like I said, the flow just wasn't there where the crowd was into it. Now, I don't know if that had to do with just anticipating Becky coming out, but I think in a vacuum, the match just didn't have a flow that that two main event TV wrestlers, male or female, need to have to be given that much time on national television.
I think it was one of the better Carmella and Charlotte matches. Not that that's high praise or anything, but yeah, it's a struggle with when you're trying to stretch out that match to, you know, to close to 15 minutes, you know, that they went tonight on SmackDown. And I don't know exactly where to point the finger, but it seems like they had a, you know, an 8 or 10 minute match planned, and it's kind of the same Charlotte match that she always has, and they just kind of stretched it out with a lot of headlocks and chin locks and some you know, drawn out selling and things of that nature. So yeah, I don't think it really ever reached a flow, and it never got to a pace where, you know, you were really excited about a near fall or yeah, anything of that nature. So I you know, it wasn't bad as far as what we've seen from Carmella and Charlotte in the past. They've been a lot more clumsy before, and I think this match was fairly clean as far as that goes. But, it didn't really suck you in, unfortunately.
Yeah, and like I said, there were a couple sequences that I think worked and some moves that were well done. I'm not, you know, saying it was a bad match. I just think you get that much time in the last 3-4 minutes, you just don't have the crowd in the palm of your hand, and the top-level wrestlers do. And that's where they still definitely have room to grow. But I'm glad they gave them the time and the opportunity in that spot. I mean, I think if you want the perception to be that they're top stars, you got to let them headline TV shows. I think that you know, you can, just presenting them in that spot, I think, sends a message to fans. These are top acts, but of course, then they have to do their job.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Let's go to 803 next, and then 615 on deck. 803, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. This is Joseph from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, Joseph. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind tonight?
I can't remember if you noted on your Thursday or Friday podcast last week, but when they uploaded Becky Lynch's promo to YouTube last week, they actually edited out all references she had towards the crowd and the fans not backing her, which gave me hope that they were starting to look at her more like a Stone Cold or a CM Punk tweener type. But this week, you know, kind of reinforced that they're still trying to do the same thing they're trying to do. I'm just wondering, is it so bad if they just turn Charlotte heel within the next couple of weeks to set up her and Rousey down the line at WrestleMania? Because I'm assuming she's going to be a heel if they do go that route. Or are they just too stubborn to admit that they're wrong and they misread the situation?
Jake, what are the odds WWE looks at this situation and changes course and has, you know, because Becky reminds me of Bayley when she just kind of snapped and the crowd was really into her and WWE wasn't quite sure what to do with that. And with Becky, here's another opportunity that they can do something with. And I just don't know if they'll call that audible. But I tell you what, if you know, if Becky's saying the crowd didn't support me, if you want to have someone give that promo authentically, Charlotte can right now. You know, I mean, she can just say, the last couple of weeks, I thought the fans were on my side, and Becky's doing this, and she's doing this, and she's doing this, and you guys booed me. Well, you know, screw you, and I always knew I was genetically superior to you guys physically, but now I know I am mentally. You can't recognize, you know, I mean, she can, like, really heal on the fans based on what happens, and not, you know, and if the fans are like, well, what she's saying is true, but it's how you respond to the truth that can define you being a heel, and Charlotte can make her case to the audience, but do so where she takes things too far and goes into the role that she's been in as a heel before, where there's that arrogance and there's that sense of being better than everybody else. And the Becky situation and being booed can be kind of what kicks her back into that zone of not pretending to like the fans anymore. I think that has more authenticity and fans are going to buy into that more than Becky continuing on the road that she started on last week. Jake.
Yeah, I would agree. When you look forward over the next 6 months or something, I'm assuming that, you know, Rousey and Charlotte is on their mind and on their calendar for some point in the future. It seems like a WrestleMania match to me. But I don't know, you know, whether they have a particular alignment in mind for Charlotte or if they want them both to be baby faces. My gut tells me that we see Becky actually win this feud. Like she, you know, whether the alignments change or however that works out, I kind of see Charlotte's path to challenging Ronda Rousey winning the Royal Rumble, and it wouldn't make any sense for her to be holding the SmackDown Women's Championship at that point in time. So whatever happens over the next few months, whatever the long-term plan is, whether Becky stays a heel or Charlotte stays a babyface, I don't really have a firm feel for that at this point. But I think we see Charlotte end up winning that Royal Rumble match.
Mark Damon on Twitter said they've turned Becky Lynch into the hottest babyface in the company by accident. It's actually kind of comical. Either way, though, Becky is amazing right now, so I'm not complaining. that's on our @PWTorch account that Mark said that. It's a situation to watch. Can WWE be nimble and call audibles or not? And how will fans react and how will it affect Charlotte and Becky if they don't? Joseph, anything else for us?
I just want to say I'm really enjoying this style Samoa Joe feud. I went to a SmackDown house show 2 weeks ago on a Monday, and it's the only match that had the entire crowd on their feet the entire time. So I just can't wait to see how it's going to resolve over the next couple of months.
Excellent. Joseph, thanks for your comments.
Thank you. Have a good one, guys.
Yep, you too. Appreciate it. Yeah, Jake, we had more with Styles and Joe. I thought Joe calling Styles' wife on his cell phone from a distance in the parking garage live on television and maybe hinting he's going to – are we going to get a skit next week for the back-to-school barbecue where Joe shows up?
Yeah, I guess it's technically the Labor Day edition of SmackDown of sorts, and so I could see them doing, you know, kind of an outside of the arena type sketch at with some staged location or whatever. But I think it's I haven't been as big of a fan of the storyline as the caller was. I think it's been. Yeah, it's worked, but it hasn't evolved quickly enough for me. I've kind of been waiting for them to move on to, you know, to some more advanced, interpersonal grudge than Joe sort of repeating the same lines about Styles being an absentee father. And it isn't that they aren't working. And it does, you know, and I think Styles has done a great job of really, you know, selling his frustration and his anger over this. But I'm sort of waiting for that tipping point where it becomes about something much more, you know, deeply personal than, you know, just some kind of insults and calls to the wife and whatnot.
It's a little bit of Cape Fear that I think is going on a little bit with a bad guy tormenting the family. And I'm curious where they go next. I don't know if it's inspired by that or it just kind of reminds me of that a little bit. But Joe is challenging the heels in the original Cape Fear and the remake, which wasn't Robert De Niro who was the tormentor in the remake?
Yeah, that was a great film. I mean, yeah. I think Joe's been doing a great job. I just think they've been letting him down a little bit with some of the dialogue.
Yeah, and I mean, it is WWE, so, you know, where do you go? You know, you can only go certain places if, you know, you don't want to do what Impact does and have him run over the daughter with a, you know, tractor or a car or something. I mean, that's, you can't just do stupidity like that and because they shouldn't and they know better. And it doesn't fit their presentation of sports entertainment at this point. But even if it did, it would be a bad skit to do. But there's a vast middle ground, and the question is how far do they push it with Joe? And we'll see. I mean, we got some more time before the pay-per-view. All right, let's go to probably our last caller we'll have time for here. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade and Jake, this is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee.
Danny, good to hear from you again. What'd you think of SmackDown?
Oh, I loved the show. I thought it was a great show from start to finish. And I'm going to be kind of a little bit in the neutral in the sense that I'm going to kind of follow the Charlotte and Becky Lynch storyline and see how it progressed more over the weeks before we can, at least I can decide whether or not the way that things are working out is okay. I actually do think that in a weird way that it's kind of setting up like they're, to me, it's like they're testing the waters on both of them. I kind of look at it as a case of Becky Lynch is just trying to show herself up to Charlotte and maybe gaining more of a mutual respect aspect. I mean, that's kind of how I kind of see that. And I definitely like Joe, the Styles angle was really clever in the sense. And, you know, just like we saw a little less of Joe, you know, in the sense and Styles was coming out more and more aggressive, you know, it was kind of like the old saying, less is more in a sense, you know, but I really do like everything that's going on in SmackDown. I think we're heading for a great fall with the show. And I don't know if you talked about it yesterday about the situation with Kevin Owens, quitting Raw, but do you guys see a possibility, you know, like, I mean, I like to think that there may be room for him on SmackDown Live and of some sort, especially since we're coming up to the 1,000th episode. You know, I could definitely see Shane McMahon coming back. Granted, I don't know if they should just go ahead and restart that feud again, but do you guys see a possibility as, like, you know, a next opponent for AJ Styles following Hell in a Cell? And, you know, because I got to think that, you know, even if AJ Styles loses the WWE Championship, he still needs some good opponents after Samoa Joe, and I just don't think The Miz is ready to be in that spot. You know, he's kind of that good sort of below to mid-card guy that he and Daniel Bryan can have that feud going for a long time. And at some point, the Styles-Joe feud will have to come to an end at some point, and you see Kevin Owens as possibly the next big opponent for AJ sure. Styles to face after Samoa Joe.
Yeah, yeah. Jake, let me, a couple things there Kenny said I'll talk about, or you can talk about. Kevin Owens going to SmackDown, any chance of that? And number two, what he said at the end there, is Miz, does Miz look like he's being set up to be a credible, fitting opponent for AJ if AJ retains the title and moves on to another challenger?
Yeah, I don't think Kevin's headed to SmackDown. They really damaged him and Sami Zayn with about 6 to 8 months of just terrible booking heading into him getting drafted over to Raw. I don't know what the future will hold for him, but you know, he could fit in on SmackDown if they wanted to make it work. But I think they really need him on Raw as a much more credible heel than he has been. You know, as much as I like what they've been doing with people like, you know, McIntyre and Ziggler, and now, you know, Strowman, it appears they'll be facing up against the Shield. The rest of the heel roster on Raw is pretty thin, unfortunately. But in terms of, you know, if he were brought over, or you know, would it work out? Yeah, potentially. I mean, there's always a chance. I think The Miz is actually probably in a better situation than Owens is right now to be challenging in main events. I mean, everybody watched that segment tonight, and that was really one of the few heat-seeking segments we've seen on SmackDown in quite some time. You know, they generally don't let Bay or heels go out there and deliver that kind of performance and go after, you know, not only the wrestler, but also his wife, who's involved in the feud and everything else that happened in that segment. So, I think The Miz is being put in a position to be a credible threat, even if he doesn't end up beating Daniel Bryan at the pay-per-view.
Two more things I want to ask you, Jake, before we go to a break and talk to our on-site correspondent. Do you agree that SmackDown, we had a couple callers mention this, is a hot brand right now? It's a hot show that they're clicking on all cylinders, as people say. Does it feel that way for you right now, or is it kind of in the middle, or do you disagree and think it's kind of a down period?
No, I think it's been trending upward for a while now. You know, it seems like they have the pieces in the right place, you know, for right now. And that's not to say after these feuds reset that it'll continue, but it really does seem like they got over the hump that they were having coming out of WrestleMania and into the summer. Joe being matched up with Styles has been great. We finally got through, you know, that awkward period of Daniel Bryan's return, and now he's facing The Miz, who everybody thought would be his first opponent. You know, they've done a decent job of featuring more than one or two women, you know, on the show, and that division feels livelier than it has in a while. So I think SmackDown has been good. And that's not even mentioning, you know, Randy Orton having a good return, Jeff Hardy's resurgence on the show, and, you know, Nakamura seemingly kind of finding a comfort zone in the U.S. title picture. I think it's all sort of working out for the better right now.
Do you think Brie Bella is helping or hurting Brian, or neither?
You know, I think there's a segment of the audience that really enjoys seeing husband and wives teaming together. I don't think it hurts him in, you know, with the core fans. You know, clearly he's on the television show with his wife, and, you know, the relationship is an important part of him, you know, whether people like it or not. But I think it's a nice, you know, they seem to want to extend this Miz and Bryan feud out for an extended period. And it's a good way to interject something fresh into the feud, whether it's for a month or maybe even two, in order to avoid having Bryan or the Miz take clean losses. You know, because I think if you want to extend that feud, you can't do that too much. And it's much better to do this than have a bunch of disqualifications or interference finishes.
Yep. All right, very good. We'll cut away here for a break and come back, and we'll talk to our on-site correspondent if all goes as planned, and then we will also answer your emails. If you want to email us if we didn't get to your call, or you got a question based on anything we said so far, email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We got some good emails waiting for us, so stay tuned for that. Also, everybody. All right, we are now joined by our on-site correspondent, Chris, calling us, or we're calling him, in Toronto after SmackDown Live. He stayed for 205 Live and the Dark Match main event. Chris, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks for taking time to talk to us. Let's just start with the Dark Match tonight. What happened after 205 Live, and was it what they advertised to help lure people into buying tickets?
I'll give him credit. It was close. We had advertised AJ, Jeff, and Daniel Bryan against Shinsuke, Randy, and Joe. We didn't get Daniel, and we didn't get Shinsuke, but we did have the others.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, considering their recent track record, it's hard to argue with that 66% success rate.
Yes, very good. What happened in the match, and how'd the crowd react?
It wasn't a match. It was 2 minutes of brawling on the outside and then a phenomenal forearm for the win. There was nothing really to write home about. Send the fans home happy, sort of thing.
All right. And the crowd seemed okay with it?
Yeah, I was surprised by how many stayed for 205 Live and then for the Dark Match. The crowd was not great to start with. I put out a picture. I tagged you in it on Twitter. The whole hard camera side was heavily topped off, and even the parts that weren't topped were not sold. I'd say half the arena was maybe 30% sold. The other side, opposite hard camera, was pretty thickly populated, but not a good crowd considering Toronto normally likes to support people when they come.
Yeah, I guess the back-to-back nights can work against it too.
Definitely a consideration.
Yeah. So talk about the Becky Lynch Charlotte crowd reaction. Loud chants again for Becky this week. She wasn't tearing into the fans, and then they went to a replay on TV, and then when they came back, I think the crowd saw the same thing we did, which is a close up of Charlotte in the corner regaining her senses from being attacked from behind by her former best friend, and the crowd goes into big boos. Talk about what it was like to be in the building for that.
I thought, actually, I don't know how this came across on TV, for the majority of the first part of the match, there was a heavy We Want Becky chant. There was the typical Yahoos in the crowd trying to get the CM Punk chants going and all sorts of other nonsense. But as the match went on, and I thought Carmella especially did a great job of telling a story in the ring of why can't I beat you, the crowd stopped chanting for Becky and just actually got into the match. So I think the girls did a great job there of sort of getting the crowd into it. And then we got the Becky run-in, which just brought us back to where we were going to be from the start, which is that Becky deserves to be here.
Jake, go ahead and chime in.
Yeah, I guess that stuck out to me quite a bit, that it was really only maybe the first minute or two of that match that we heard Becky chant, and then it sort of faded away. I guess what I wanted to ask was, towards the tail end of that Almas and Bryan match, when The Miz and Maryse got involved, there were some audible boos on TV, but it didn't seem particularly loud. Were they louder in the building, or was it just the mics being a little soft? I guess I was hoping that that segment would get more heat than it probably ended up actually getting.
I think it was a bit split. Miz has done such a great job that people actually love him even as a heel, and he was getting some cheers even against Daniel Bryan, which surprised me. The reaction that Brie got was diametrically opposed to what she got last night, just appearing on camera backstage. I can't imagine that's all down to Nikki. So I think it's the association with Daniel, much like if you bring Roman out next to the Shield, he gets cheered. But the crowd tonight, there was a definite split of people cheering for The Miz and people booing him.
Have you been at buildings for Daniel Bryan, in the arena for Daniel Bryan during his various peaks of popularity in WWE?
So I've been a wrestling fan and a WWE fan for 30 plus years. This is my first SmackDown taping. Last night was my first Raw. So no. also, when I did come to Toronto to see Ring of Honor, was right after he left. So I missed out on him completely.
Jeez. Well, so talk about his popularity compared to AJ Styles, heck, Becky Lynch, The New Day. Who jumped out to you as like the most over babyface on the show tonight?
I think I'd have to say Daniel shaded it. All of the top faces got huge pops, and so did Orton, actually. He still gets that legacy pop, as it's been referred to many times on here. But there wasn't much to choose between Orton, AJ, Hardy, Daniel, even Ty Dillinger, who came out for the dark match before the show.
Okay. With New Day and Booker banking a surprise appearance, talk about the crowd reaction to that. I joked on Twitter. I'm like, you know, every show is somebody's first ever wrestling show. You know, it's just everybody has a first show they watch. What a way to be introduced to professional wrestling, by having New Day come out and celebrate and do their act, and then King Booker comes out and does his whole spiel. I think about that sometimes through the lens of newer viewers who don't know the backstory, or, you know, and they're just watching this craziness play out. Talk about how engaged the crowd was during that pretty long segment.
So the people around me actually was a great sort of cross-section of wrestling fans, because I had two young kids with their mother, and their mother came up around the same time I started watching wrestling. She was a big Hogan fan, and she knew who Booker T was, but had never heard of King Booker. So she was really thrown. The kids were not into it because Booker's been off TV before they even started watching. I thought it was hilarious, and I'm sure most of the people listening to this would have the full background as well. But there was enough of the crowd that knew what was going on that found it amusing that I think it hit home.
Yeah. And the kind of legacy reaction that somebody like Booker gets, it is interesting how different ages of fans react differently. Like even the idea of the Bellas being legends like Shawn Michaels, you know, some people, the Bellas are legends and Shawn Michaels is a guy from the past who they sort of have heard about or seen do zany DX skits. Like, it really does depend. I mean, if you're not a student of the industry and you're just kind of following it, how you react to people really is dependent upon, you know, when you were first into it and most into it. So that's interesting. Jake, go ahead. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that really hit home for me when I realized the last time I saw WWE was they came to Newfoundland for a house show 10 years ago. And I think R-Truth was in the dark match that night as well. So that tells you just how long some of these people have been around.
Absolutely. Jake, go ahead with anything you want to ask.
Yeah, so there was a throwaway match early on in the show between Billie Kay and Naomi. But one of the things that's kind of stuck out to me over the last couple of months watching SmackDown TV is that the Iconics kind of do this insult comic bit when they come out, and it just seems like everybody dies a slow death in the building while it's happening. Did you hear anything? Were there any cheers or boos, or was it just no reaction? Because at least I couldn't hear anything coming through the TV.
Literal nothing until they hit the cheap heat segment for the Raptors. They are better than that, but they're not being allowed to show it. And I think what really annoyed a lot of the people sitting around me was not just the bad comedy, but the complete no-selling that Billie Kay was doing on Naomi, who actually had some pretty impressive offense for a two-minute match.
The Raptors chant was about as enthusiastic as anything all night until maybe Becky came out.
Yeah, I'm always surprised that there's more of a crossover between wrestling and basketball than there is between hockey and basketball, and you'd think the opposite, but I think you get more heat insulting the Raptors than you do the Leafs.
Yeah, I think that's true, and we had the replica Stanley Cup from that Big E brought out also. Did you sense that the crowd knew or were into Zelina and Andrade?
Definitely. I certainly was. I was salivating over the possibility of the match that we could get after I realized just how tiny Zelina Vega is. It's actually, she is a little child in that ring next to everybody else.
Yeah.
And Brian is not exactly tall. So, but I think, yeah, there was a lot of people in there that were sort of going, can we really get this match? Are we that lucky? Can we have two match of the year candidates in back-to-back nights?
Yeah, I don't think it quite hit that level, but it was good. I mean, I think the crowd was into it too.
Clean finish in five more minutes. I think we might have got there, but
yeah,
it was good for what we saw.
How did the crowd react to Jeff Hardy's mic work and Randy Orton coming out relative to the other segments of the night? Did it feel? You mentioned Randy getting the legacy pop, but how did Jeff Hardy do relative to the other baby faces?
I feel like he's hit that sort of Canadian Heart Foundation era Bret Hart, where he's still not great on the mic, but he's made enough mistakes now that he's not terrible anymore.
Yeah.
So I think people, it was fine. It did what it had to do. It wasn't bad. Orton obviously is better than Jeff, but that's not saying a lot.
Right.
And the segment just, it functioned to do exactly what he needed it to do.
Tell us more about the matches before SmackDown went on the air.
So we had R-Truth and Ty Dillinger against Sanity. Was the opening match. That was the only match before SmackDown went live. And surprisingly enough, Dillinger and R-Truth got the win.
Ah, cool. Who wrestled in Sanity, if you remember?
It was Young and Alexander Wolf. I guess they wanted all of the Canadians on SmackDown to be on the show in some way, shape, or form.
Sure, yep. What were you going to say about it?
It was a decent little match. Dillinger really looked good, but they couldn't even give him the win on TV. So I guess they just didn't want Sanity losing again.
What was your takeaway from seeing 205 live in person?
I don't think Buddy Murphy is capable of having a bad match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he and Kalista just really, really put on a show. I've seen Buddy have better matches, but it was great. The guy is just, I think he's found his niche, to be honest. And he's doing a really good job just being a base for all of the flippy guys on SmackDown. And just, he puts on SmackDown.
205
up,
yeah.
And he just puts on a show every time. And tonight was no exception. Akira Tozawa just cannot buy a crowd reaction. And Hideo Itami is slightly better, but it's still not great. Like, they really need to do something to shake that up. I think put it before SmackDown is the obvious answer. But the matches were enjoyable.
Did the crowd, how much the crowd stuck around?
Very few left. I think the fact that it's school holiday still, and here in Canada, we don't go back to school till after Labor Day. So there were still a lot of kids who could stick around without having to worry about getting up early tomorrow. So yeah, it was, I'd say maybe 15% of the people who were here actually left.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty good. Did they seem to know the product? Like, were they sticking around just to get in generic wrestling, WWE style, or do you think there were some storylines and wrestlers that they were actually excited to see?
there was definitely some of the sticking around just to see wrestling. But there were a lot of people there who knew what they were watching and were ready to cheer for the people they liked. There were some, shall we say, exuberant people in the crowd getting some chants going, and the crowd are very willing to get into those chants. So it's the kind of audience you want as a performer.
Now, Jake, do you have anything else you want to ask Chris? I got one last question for him, or actually two, but...
I don't think so. Yeah, I think we got through everything.
Yeah.
I guess the Samoa Joe segment, were people upset that they didn't see him live in the building, or was there not much of a reaction for seeing him on the Tron?
I don't think they were that upset. I think the bigger problem was that new shirt he was wearing was not available on the merch stands. I did take note of what was there, because I know sometimes you want to know that. I am walking past a dance party. Give me a moment. But there was no Becky merch. There was no Sasha merch either night.
Huh.
The only women's merch that was there was Ronda and Alexa, actually.
Weird. Yeah, well.
But that new Joe shirt, I would have loved to have it, but couldn't find it. Wasn't there.
Yeah, I took note of that, too. I thought that was a good shirt for Joe. Yeah, too bad it's
definitely
not in
was,
stock.
Yeah.
So, final two questions for you. First of all, I'll just do the usual one. Would you pay for your tickets? Where'd you sit both nights? And are you happy with the price you paid for the view that you had?
So I had to pay an extra amount to get here because I had to fly 3 hours just to come to Toronto to see the show. So factoring that in, it was never going to be full value. Tonight's ticket was 110 Canadian, and I was the first row off the floor. Great seats, yeah. Great value. I got to see Daniel Bryan up close. Could not be happier. Last night I was a little further back. They were 80. The show, I think, just felt better. Even though I prefer SmackDown on TV, something about the atmosphere on Raw last night just felt like a bigger deal to me. So both nights, definitely happy, and I'll be here for SummerSlam next year.
Yeah, Toronto's got to be excited about that.
Oh, for sure. All three nights, I'll be front and center. Well, not front, but I don't have $1,000 to spend, but I'll
yeah.
be there.
And so my final question for you is just as a 30-plus-year wrestling fan, who hadn't been to a WWE TV taping, what stood out from that experience in contrast to all the other live events you've been to?
It's the little things that you don't really notice when you're watching TV. Like, Naomi's entrance is gorgeous in person, you know? And the ropes for 205 Live, I'm going to go break the fourth wall here, they're not purple. It's just purple tape. Little things that you don't actually realize watching TV that never would occur to you.
How about the pace of the show as a spectator? Did you notice it was frustrating or dragged out, or did it seem like they just kept things moving and it was a really swift entertainment experience?
So the parts of the show that drag on TV drag even more when you realize that you have to sit through the commercial break in that dragged position.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the term rest holds, but the submission holds that aren't going to get a submission. Let's use that word. They seem even worse when you add the 2.5 minutes that everybody else is watching, the 15th ad for the WWE Network that night.
Yeah, yeah. Well, cool. Chris, I'm glad we got you on the show and appreciate you sharing your perspective on tonight.
Oh, man, anytime. A devout listener, I will continue calling in and emailing, so you're not getting rid of me that easy.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Wade.
You bet. All right, we are back for the mailbag segment of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Jake, before I hit email, tell people a little more about how to find you on social media and what you do for ProWrestling.net.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at BarnettJake. I also do the weekly SmackDown reports for ProWrestling.net. I appear on a weekly podcast with Jason, .net Weekly, which is the flagship show on the member side of the website. And also Will Pruitt and I, another ProWrestling.net staffer, do a weekly podcast called the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, which is often available for free. So you can find that on the ProWrestling.net free audio feed.
Very good. All right. Let's get to our emails. We'll begin with Tom from Winchester. He says, watching Andrade Cien Almas versus Daniel Bryan at the moment, and I'm realizing how much more I'm enjoying SmackDown compared to Raw. Ouch, that superplex. Anyway, I'm feeling that as a whole. SmackDown seems to be more fun of a show. Every segment has a point. There's multiple storylines for me to engage in. I feel Raw's been bogged down with a Roman issue, where I feel like all roads lead to getting him cheered and are tied to him somewhat. My question, Joe is on absolute fire. If he doesn't defeat AJ, what do you see as next for him? I'd love to see Joe go over and have AJ chase for a few months. I just went VIP with PW Torch, and I'm kicking myself for not doing it sooner. Thanks, Tom. Everyone go to PWTorchVIPinfo.com if you want to not kick yourself later and go VIP now. Appreciate the comments, Tom. Jake, yeah, Joe is on – I mean, you talked about the material Joe was getting earlier in the show, but his demeanor and his ring work and his persona, and I think I compared him to Robert De Niro in his prime as a heel and a villain. What do you think of Joe becoming a centerpiece heel champion for a while and doing a title switch?
I expect him to win at Hell in a Cell. I think he becomes the champion, and I think the story that they have been telling, as limited as the dialogue has been at times, is that AJ Styles is in a place where he can't think straight, and it's going to cause him to make unforced errors, and that's going to lead to Joe getting the better of him. And I think it's a fine story to tell. It just depends on where they go from there. Once Styles is in chase mode, is he going to be dedicating matches to his family to try to get it? How do you navigate around the difficult situation of what Joe has been saying is kind of true? And, how do you make a baby face out of that? And I think they've been doing a decent enough job having Styles defend himself. But what happens after Hell in a Cell? I'm not quite sure. But I love the idea of Joe being the heel champion on SmackDown. I think it would add a different dimension to the show. As much as I like AJ Styles, I think, his title run has kind of run its course, and it feels a bit stale at this point. And so I'm all for them trying new things on top.
All right. We got a number of emails about the Bellas and how they're being talked about and presented. Here's an example. Brad from North Carolina says, I'm currently sweeping up the pieces of my brain that exploded onto the floor when I heard Zelina Vega refer to Brie Bella as a legend. How does this kind of writing get passed on and make it to TV? It is what WWE does best, though, making two of their top heels in Vega and Almas look completely idiotic. I'd suggest that Vega was being sarcastic, but her delivery sounded too genuine. What legendary accomplishment has Brie Bella ever achieved? Maybe one day I'll come to grips with these poor writing errors, but today's not the day. Sorry for the rant. I love the show and all the insight PW Torch brings to my podcast feed. P.S. As I was writing this email, a commercial aired advertising next week's Raw, stating there would be two legendary returns. Shawn Michaels, an actual legend and Hall of Famer, and the Bellas. I'm turning my TV off now. I need some air. I'll read another email related to the Bellas, if I can... There we go. Kenny W. says, are the Bella Twins as popular as WWE makes them out to be? It seems like last night on Raw, they got booed during their segment. They bring up that hashtag, give Divas a chance, started during their match, which is true, but during the time, I felt like it was more aimed at AJ Lee, and WWE has spun it. Brie got a pop tonight, but she was next to Daniel Bryan. Am I wrong thinking they aren't as over as presented on TV? Thanks for all the work you guys do with the Torch. I work night shift, and there's no way I could stay awake all night without my PW Torch VIP subscription. Go VIP, everyone. Thank you, Kenny. Appreciate the endorsement and the kind words. I thought when the crowd was chanting Brian's name, when Brie and Daniel were standing next to each other, there was, happy jealousy on Brie's face. Well, I'm happy for Brian. He's still popular like this. But he's been on TV for months, and I'm kind of new around here. I'm just projecting and reading into her body language and facial expressions, but, that's what we do. It's kind of fun to look at that and see when one person's getting cheered and the other isn't. If you can read into anything, I thought I saw a little happy jealousy there, not just pure happiness. I don't think the Bellas are legends, Jake. I think they're being overpushed. I don't think right now they're very popular. I think people see them, especially... I don't think the Bellas TV show's done them a lot of favors. I think Corey Graves made fun of Nikki saying "like" last night on Raw. I think Nikki's probably more of a problem than Brie, but I don't think either of them have... I mean, they're sort of entertaining in a reality show way that is thankful because Sarah Kay at PWTorch.com does hilarious reviews. Hate watching any reality show the Bellas are on, but... I do think that WWE frames them in a way that just doesn't sync up with how fans feel about them. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you know, there is a mainstream part of the audience that does see them as legends, but I see it as a massive overstatement, and I'm with our emailers. How about you, Jake?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to mistake them for, like, legends in the ring. Like, they've been, I guess they're, you know, they're WWE legends in the sense that they've been around for, what, like a dozen years now? I think they debuted in 2006 or 7. I can't remember the precise date or whatever. But, you know, they survived and eventually thrived in a very difficult era for women in WWE, and now they want to push them as I guess legends or something that younger female stars in the company look up to. I don't necessarily understand it. You know, I don't relate to it in any particular way, but I think, you know, I wouldn't trust my own opinion on the subject, to be honest. I'd be looking at what do more mainstream WWE fans think? What do female fans think? And I don't really know what the answer to that is. I'd have to talk to more of them.
I think if you just react to look at how the crowd is reacting to them. To me, that's sort of an indication. Maybe at house shows with kids and families, people see them as, wow, the Bellas are here. Aren't we fortunate? They're in our town. This is great. But I do think more so than most people who have been around as long as they have, they're at a place where the crowd is not greeting them like, wow, they're back. You know, this is great. These big stars. And I do sense from the reality show, as pre-produced as everything is, I do get the sense the Bellas think that they're a bigger deal than they are, or that they push themselves hard in order to try to become bigger deals by kind of pushing beyond what they've actually accomplished. They were not a part of main event programs until they were attached to the men in their lives. And, you know, because the women's division wasn't. It's not just a knock on them, but I'm with you sort of on, like, not trusting your own judgment in terms of, do I know how all fans feel about them? But just the TV audience reaction so far seems to be ominous for them. I don't think that there's a crowd waiting to treat them as the stars that WWE is framing them as. I guess I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I don't think they've gotten particularly raucous receptions in front of live crowds. I'm really curious to see, you know, who ends up, you know, in attendance at that Evolution show. You know, if it's a majority or even a vocal minority female audience there. If there's a greater share of women in attendance than what's at a normal WWE show, that would help me a lot in determining where a lot of these women stand in terms of reactions. Because I think there's, you know, especially in major cities, where WWE films Raw and SmackDown, there's a greater percentage of core wrestling fans than would probably be at a house show or another, smaller WWE town. And so it's difficult to really get a feel for what the actual audience feels about a lot of these acts in terms of especially the women who, when I go to house shows, get much bigger reactions than they seem to get on television.
Javier from Miami called earlier, but he did email. He had something else he wanted to add. He said, shame on the people chanting what while Andrade Cien Almas was talking. He isn't the first wrestler who isn't a native English speaker that fans have done it to. See Shinsuke Nakamura and Asuka. And I find it disrespectful to both the talent and to the people who are trying to follow the narrative. Daniel Bryan also acted like he didn't understand what he was saying. If a heel is talking in a way that seems kind of nasty and aggressive, but also you can't really understand what they're saying, is it disrespectful to give them the what treatment? Or is that okay because they're a heel and that's, you know, part of the latitude fans have in pro wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the show and I had the volume up pretty high, and I didn't really get a great feel for what Almas was saying either. I mean, there was some issues with intelligibility there, but I wouldn't have thought to chant something derogatory at him. I mean, it's just clearly that he's, you know, English is his second language and he's still adapting to it. But I think over time, you know, he'll get better. And I think for now, at least, Zelina Vega is an important part of his act and making sure that, you know, he's represented well on the microphone clearly and succinctly. But yeah, I think it's an issue for all international stars who attempt to come to the United States and then learn English in a wrestling format, because fans are brutal with promos. I mean, they just, yeah, you know, they heckle immediately, and it's unfortunate that people aren't more open-minded, but that's just kind of what you deal with wrestling crowds.
Javier also says, forgiveness for my not plugging VIP on my call. You should know the content you and your minions produce is the lifeblood that courses through my veins. Thank you for making work bearable. Thank you for your support and kind words. A couple Twitter comments before I go back to email. Ken Arnold on Twitter at the Wade Keller said, even if Becky does become a great heel, this is reminding me of Steve Austin's heel run. No matter how vicious or vile, people will still cheer. Some wrestlers are just natural character baby faces. And Joel Pearl says, all I want tonight is Wade Keller to spend 15 minutes on Becky Lynch's kick-ass shoes. Jake, did you notice Becky's shoes?
I did, yeah. They were kind of winged, I guess. They were a different design than she normally wears. I don't know if it's... It didn't look like casual wear unless... I'm probably... not identifying them correctly. They're probably like really popular sneakers or something, and I'm just an idiot. But they definitely stood out to me, at least. They were different, and they gave her a bit of an attitude.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to... I can't do 15 minutes on it, sorry. Let's go to Zach B., who says, Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair's the hottest angle SmackDown is going. There are so many shades of gray going on. Charlotte's promo tonight came across as slightly more heelish than Becky's last week. That being said, there's a particular pay-per-view coming up. The first women's Hell in a Cell, in my opinion, was marred by the fact that it was more about making history than the rivalry between the combatants. Hell in a Cell is the ultimate battleground between two blood enemies. Ideally, it's also their final match. It's unlikely this will be Becky and Charlotte's final match, but in your opinion, is their rivalry intense enough for Hell in a Cell? Jake, I'll add to that. Would you rather see Becky and Charlotte in Hell in a Cell than Jeff Hardy in Hell in a Cell? There's always a risk with Jeff Hardy in a Hell in a Cell that he's going to, as Kriti Smith put it on my Twitter feed, he will likely die. Because Jeff just doesn't know how to rein himself in on the chances he takes, whether it's motocross or wrestling ring. So you can say putting him in a Hell in a Cell might not be great judgment on WWE's part. Is this a Hell in a Cell level feud?
I don't think so yet. You know, I think they got to have at least one singles match first before you toss them in more, I guess, brutal stipulations. I could see them having, you know, a cage match or some kind of no disqualification or street fight or something at Evolution, you know, if the feud continues that far. But it seems a bit soon to just toss them into Hell in a Cell. Plus, I think they already have their Hell in a Cell matches picked out, it seems.
Yeah, I don't think three in one night would... I mean, we're only at two, right?
Yeah, it's just the two thus far.
Okay. I'm a little worried we're going to go to Lockdown TNA, Dusty Rhodes style, and just have an all Hell in a Cell night, but hopefully not. All right. Susie in New Jersey says, hi, Wade and Jake. Do you think we will actually get a back-to-school barbecue brawl next week between Joe and AJ? We haven't had a good food fight in a while. Actually, we just did on SmackDown tonight with New Day throwing pancakes around. I guess not quite a food fight. And I think Joe could find a way to make it entertainingly brutal. Not sure if anyone's heart would get ripped out and grilled, but I'm sure there would be plenty of breakable tables and steaming baked beans to go around. In all seriousness, I'm curious to hear what you think would and wouldn't work about it and how they would hopefully find a way to eliminate the campiness. I'm excited to potentially see a creative out-of-arena segment, such as Stone Cold and Booker T in the supermarket, but with more savagery. Thanks for the great content, always. Thanks, Susie. Yeah, I'm trying to... I mean, if you do a sketch at a school barbecue with a bunch of other kids and parents, you need a bunch of actors and a bunch of kids, a bunch of grown-up actors, but also kid actors, and I just don't know how it doesn't end up seeming campy if Joe shows up. Now, if... Yeah. I mean, it's so hard. Like, why are... Like, if Joe hires a camera guy and films himself being creepy but not being noticed... and then plays the video, and there's a point where Joe's, like, really close to AJ and his wife and his daughter, but they didn't even see him. To me, that'd be my suggestion on how to do it and have it not be campy, where nobody sees Joe is there, but after the fact, Joe reveals that he actually got very close to the family and they didn't notice. And I think that kind of restraining order moment would be better than Joe showing up and having kids run screaming and a food fight. Like, keep it, like, I like Joe when he's understated and threatening, not frothing at the mouth and yelling. So that would be my suggestion. Play some mind games, reveal that he got really close, and he can just go, AJ, Wendy, maybe next time I'm close, you will notice me. You know, and you never know where I'm around a corner or whatever. So something along those lines, I guess, if I had to think on my feet about how to do that, that would be what I'd recommend more than just some campy, wild food fight with kids running and screaming. Jake?
Yeah, I guess in my head I went in a different direction. I think the way this feud has gone thus far is that you see, you know, Joe kind of, I guess, vacillating between being very calm and in control and enjoying the fact that he's getting under AJ Styles' skin and causing him to lose his cool, you know, and then he kind of goes to the other end of the spectrum with just hyper-violence. And so I think it would be more effective if you had Joe actually show up at whatever barbecue or whatever and keep his cool and have Styles be the one that goes crazy and initiates the violence and makes his own wife and children uncomfortable. And then you go through the process of AJ having to reevaluate, you know, his attitude and his approach to the situation. Like, and that sort of sells, you know, the point home that, that he's going to be prone to making mistakes because he can't control himself in this situation.
I could see AJ and Wendy and their daughter showing up at the hot dog stand, and then the guy serving hot dogs turns around and says, ketchup and mustard on that, and it's Samoa Joe, and then that's when AJ freaks out. I could see WWE doing that. That would get into the campy zone, but there might be a way to make that work. Scotty from Fort Lauderdale says, after it was announced last night that Reigns would be defending his Universal title against Braun Strowman inside Hell in a Cell, I was hoping that the WWE Championship would get similar billing. It makes more sense to me to have that match headline inside a cell due to the personal animosity built between AJ and Joe this past month. Instead, we get Orton and Hardy. Yeah, I understand that their feud is also bitter, but we still don't know why Orton targeted Hardy specifically. Meanwhile, Joe is consistently insulting AJ's manhood and calling out his family. I think it's pretty clear that the AJ-Joe rematch will be underneath the Hardy-Orton match, and it's definitely the Universal title match. I would like to see one friggin' pay-per-view with the WWE title headlining the show. They need to just merge the damn world titles again. This is why I'm so against the brand split returning. Sorry for the long email, but I had to rant for once. Have a great night, and everyone go VIP. Thank you, Scotty. Appreciate that. Is Hardy, you know, we say maybe Charlotte Becky's not at the point of Hell in a Cell, but Orton Hardy really isn't either, and AJ Joe feels like it's closer to that. I guess if they want to continue the feud longer, you can't really go anywhere after Hell in a Cell. Maybe that's the rationale.
Yeah, that was my feel, was that they want to extend this out. I mean, they're probably going to have a rematch, or you know, maybe they're part of a Survivor Series match at Survivor Series. I'm not sure how they'd put that together, but I anticipate this feud probably going another month or two at least.
All right, let's go to Andrew, who says, "Is it me or does Samoa Joe go into a pretty nice Biff Tannen from Back to the Future impression when he starts to yell, Wendy McFly?"
That's an interesting one. I wouldn't have pulled Biff Tannen as a reference, but
no,
I can go with it.
I'll stick with Cape Fear and Robert De Niro. But all right. Spencer from Bryan, Ohio says, "In the video package of Becky's promo last week, the part where she ripped on the fans was omitted. Tonight, she beats down the overrated Charlotte to great applause and just accepts the fans seemingly. Looks to me like WWE's already given up on making Becky heel and is letting her be a straight fire babyface, much like Stone Cold." I think people were disappointed, Jake, with Bayley when she kind of became Stone Cold Bayley, and they did not follow up on that and just made her be nice Bayley again, hanging out with Sasha amiably. This might be, I mean, I guess enough people are emailing and commenting. Is your judgment they are changing course on Becky, or is your judgment we're reading too much into it?
I think people just really want to believe at this point that they're changing direction. I have yet to see any evidence of it, whether it's on television or their promotional materials or video packages. I know people have commented a lot on that edited interview that went up on YouTube, but they do that a lot. If you watch people's promos, they just, you know, they edit out the parts that they don't think are particularly relevant to the story at hand. And I know it did seem a little bit out of place when Becky just randomly started healing on the fans during that promo anyway. So I think they just cleaned it up with the edit, and it was better off for it, actually. So I try not to read too much into it yet. I don't think they're immediately going to change directions. And the fact that they're online engaging with people and defending themselves makes me think that they think they're onto something here.
Excellent. We will wrap up on that note. Jake, thanks again for joining me today on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Always good to have you on.
Always a pleasure. Thanks a lot, Wade.
All right, again, check out Jake's work over at ProWrestling.net. You can read a SmackDown report every single Tuesday night and hear him on a weekly basis with Jason Powell on their membership audio and also the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. So check that out. Thanks to Jake for joining me today. Tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me for his every three-week appearance on the Thursday flagship. So if you've got a question for us for the flagship edition, send it in quick because we'll be recording that on Wednesday afternoon. Send to WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand on Twitter at PWTorch. Same thing on Instagram at PWTorch. And same thing at Facebook, Facebook.com/PWTorch. You can also friend me on Facebook at Facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch. Be sure to check out PWTorch.com every day for the latest breaking news, editorials, TV show coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, flashbacks, and more. Make it a daily stop. You'll find content there you will not find anywhere else. And that'll do it for me for today. If you haven't yet, be sure to check out yesterday's Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast with an in-depth conversation, extended conversation with callers and our on-site correspondent and emailers with co-host Rich Fan from the PW Torch Livecast and VIP East Coast Cast. That is yesterday's show. If you haven't downloaded that yet, check it out. That will do it for me for today. Thanks, everybody. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off. Please keep us in mind when you're about to shop at Amazon. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click on the Amazon logo on that page, and it takes you right to the Amazon homepage. But that two-second detour by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon means we get a commission on whatever you buy on that shopping trip. So every single time you're going to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.